Remember, too, that gifted students are special. Yes.
The Haines School Board votes to create an alternative learning program, and there will soon be fewer Saners fishing in Southeast Alaska. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Margaret Friednauer. Those stories and more up next. The Hainesboro School Board on Tuesday approved the creation of an alternative education program at the high school. The program would occupy a classroom to provide a setting for students in three areas: those at risk academically, those needing specific intervention to pass the high school graduation qualifying exam, and students wanting more challenging courses or correspondence courses. High school principal Michelle Byers said many of the alternative learning programs are already going on, but a dedicated space for students would provide more oversight. Currently, students may be taking correspondence courses in the library or studying independently in open areas of the school. Funding already exists for the center, said Byer. A special education grant has carryover for the next 2 years, which gives the school the funding and time to examine if the concept will work. The carryover funds will provide about $50,000 for a paraeducator to staff the center and another $10,000 for equipment. Although the funding is coming from a special education grant, school board chair Carol Kelly said advanced students still qualify for services under the title special education.
Remember, too, that gifted students are special ed, and they'll be in there taking advanced courses. Mm-hmm. So, and that, you know, we haven't done enough for them, so this really is going to help them. Mm-hmm.
Approval of the program led into discussion about several room changes that will take place for the next school year. The alternative school will take over a room currently used by the community education program. That program will move to a smaller room as other shifts take place to move the superintendent, the high school principal, and the school counselor to different offices around the building and set aside a dedicated space for student detentions. The board also discussed at length pursuing grants for early literacy programs. Superintendent Michael Byer and Early Literacy Coordinator Jeannie Kitayama asked the board to approve up to $5,000 to hire a grant writer that could help pursue a large state grant expected to be announced soon. But the board instead voted to call a special meeting once the grant is announced and more details are available before approving the funds for a grant writer. At the end of the meeting, the school board casually discussed the sale of the Haines Elks Lodge. The building is up for sale after last month's closure of the local lodge. The board member said having the building, or at least the property, could be beneficial if the school has to expand in the future. But Chair Carol Kelly said the borough has not expressed any interest in purchasing the building or property. The school board set its next meeting for June 26th. There will soon be fewer Saners allowed to fish in Southeast Alaska. A majority of the fleet has voted to pay for an industry-funded buyback program. Supporters say it means less competition on the fishing grounds, while opponents say it isn't worth the cost to remaining permit holders. Matt Lichtenstein reports.
The plan passed by a substantial margin, and there was a good turnout. Nearly three-quarters of the region's 379 Sane permit holders sent ballots into the National Marine Fisheries Service, which is administering the program. 215 of those Saners voted yes, and 54 voted no. That means the plan moves forward.
We were really pleased to see that. You know, it sounded a lot closer, but really pleased to see that it was a significant margin.
Fishermen and Southeast Alaska Saners Association Executive Director Bob Thorsenson has long advocated for the buyback. It will pay out a total of over $13 million to retire 64 Sane permits from fishermen who agreed to the deal prior to the vote. The program was initiated by an industry group called the Southeast Revitalization Association. The money comes from a federal loan, which the rest of the fleet will have to pay back. The association projects it could be paid off in 7 years, with each fisherman paying a fee based on 3% of their landings. That percentage could drop if the fee brings in more the revenue than expected, so Thorsenson thinks the assessment will be closer to 1% after a couple of years.
Yeah, but that's a very small price to pay to re-limit limited entry for the purse seine fleet was jacked up to numbers that were unsustainable back when this fishery began as limited entry fishery.
The first limited entry permits for Saners were issued in 1975. Ultimately, 419 people qualified for them. A smaller grant-funded buyback program in 2008 helped reduce that number to current levels. With improving markets for Alaska salmon, participation has been on the upswing in the last several years. Thorstensen and other buyback proponents say that by reducing the number of permits again, the seine fishery will retain its value or grow more valuable for the remaining fleet. Opponents cite a variety of concerns, one of which is that the program is inflating the value of seine permits, making it tougher for new participants to buy in. The buyback will pay out an average of about $205,000 per permit. That's significantly higher than recent market prices. According to Alaska's Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, Southeast seine permits sold for an average of $129,000 in 2011 and $168,000 just this past March. Petersburg Seiner Charlie Christensen is one of the permit holders who voted against the buyout.
And I've been against it the whole time, still against it. It's a colossal waste of money that we've had this many boats since limited entry we managed to muddle through. I think it's more greed than anything else. You're going to get these permits down to so few and so expensive that nobody can get started in it and fish anymore. The buyback programs, I've never been in favor of any of them. They don't seem to work very well for anybody.
Christensen thinks only those who supported the buyout should have to pay for it. As it is, he and the rest of the remaining Seiners will start paying for the program this season, and the 64 people who are selling their permits will get paid up front with the federal loan. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
There's a lot of talk about hydropower in the Upper Lynn Canal. Research is ongoing about utilizing Connolly, Shuby, and Walker Lakes for hydropower. But here's a different approach to hydropower generation from the Pacific Northwest. It's not about damming rivers or lakes. Instead, it's about building long earthen dams to make new off-stream hydropower reservoirs. They're being designed to act as giant batteries and shock absorbers for the electric grid. Northwest News Network's correspondent Tom Bonzi reports from Portland, Oregon.
Here's an odd thought that relates to keeping your lights burning steady and bright. Someday, a small portion of your electricity bill could go toward pumping water in a loop. Lots of water, pumped uphill, run back downhill, then pump back uphill again. Enterprising energy developers have at least 7 places in the Northwest in mind for projects of this type. Eric Stimley is shepherding a proposal for 2 reservoirs near Klamath Falls, one up on a plateau, connected to another down below in the valley.
It's a large reclamation project, yes. Hundreds of workers on site. You know, the construction project would likely take place over the course of years. A large project.
Stimley works in the Portland Regional Office of energy developer Riverbank Power. On the office walls are renderings of what in the biz they call a pumped storage hydropower project. Stanley gets help explaining how it works from Ellis Arzu of joint venture partner Enexco.
On energy generation, what we're talking about is a simple arbitrage between pumping using low-cost energy, so basically off-peak, and basically generating the energy at peak hours of the day.
In other words, the good old Wall Street principle of buy low, sell high. But Arzu says that alone doesn't net much money, given this region's generally low electricity prices. So the developers are marketing their project as a grid stability service. They propose to make most of their money billing utilities for backing up or balancing the volatile, irregular output of the Northwest's burgeoning fleet of wind farms.
So the wind stops blowing, there's no energy from that wind farm. What happens at that point?
Call me, he says in so many words. Conversely, Arzu says his project could soak up excess power when wind and solar farms overproduce and hydroelectric dams are maxing out with spring runoff. Pumping water uphill consumes lots of electricity. The upper reservoir then essentially acts like a big battery. It can later release the water on demand to run downhill through a generator that effectively time shifts power production. Multiple energy developers are proposing this sort of hydropower project in the Northwest. The Klickitat Public Utility District has applied for a federal permit to build 2 connected reservoirs at the east end of the Columbia Gorge. The PUD's general manager is Jim Smith.
Well, as soon as wind development started going, I'm going to put it crazy in the area, we'll kind of recognize probably the time to start working on a project like this.
There are other competing proposals in eastern Washington near Grand Coulee, also in eastern Oregon, and southern Idaho. Whichever end up happening, the construction price tags are staggering, in the neighborhood of $2 billion. That's billion with a B.
You know, that is the challenge. Who pays for this?
Rick Miller is a nationally known hydropower consultant with HDR Engineering.
And since it's a regional grid benefit, there are a lot of discussions going on that maybe, you know, that everybody pays a very small portion of their power bill would go to the contributor for this type of an asset.
Major Northwest utilities haven't yet been convinced they should pay a third party to ensure grid stability. That's one reason why the big reservoir projects we're talking about could take 5 to 10 years to develop. Area utilities are also looking at cheaper alternatives, which include your basic natural gas backup power plant and a variety of more exotic options. All of these have their own limitations, though. I'm Tom Bonsi reporting.
And we have a correction from our last newscast. A story mentioned the various narratives for how Seduction Point was named. One of those is from when Captain George Vancouver came to the area, not Captain James Cook. We apologize for that mix-up. This is Margaret Friednauer for KHNS News. Special thanks to Matt Lichtenstein and Tom Bonsi for their reports.